Hey folks, this is Kevin. On this week's episode of Risk, from Arrested Development and Veep, you'll hear Tony Hale.
For those of you who followed my career, anxiety and emasculation is clearly a forte of mine.
That and more. But first, have you ever gotten just too carried away with something? A little too obsessed? A little too hardworking, maybe? A little too addicted to something? A little too pissed off? If you have interesting memories about times in life where you were just too much, pitch us. It's easy to do at risk-show.com/submissions.
We'll be right back.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Now here's the show. Hello, folks. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is Les Baxter behind me now, and we're calling this week's episode Hindsight. And in hindsight, oh my gosh, folks, the episode we put out a couple weeks ago where Tom Boulay and Ken Cole shared about the near-death experience they lived through and all the complexities of their relationship with their son Matthew, it's gotten so many amazing responses from you all. Remember, it's stories like that that are the reason we hope you'll support us over at patreon.com/risk. Now, folks, in a little bit, we're going to hear from Rita Plush and Sage. But before that, a story from Tony Hale, who has been so amazing in so many amazing projects like Arrested Development and Veep. And you can find him on Instagram at Mr. Tony Hale. Here he is at the Risk Live show that we did in San Francisco last January with a story we call Stone in My Pocket.
So nice. So, the theme of tonight is surprise, and my story centers around a surprise engagement I did for my wife. This story is also a cautionary tale of the result of extreme anxiety. For those of you who have followed my career, anxiety and emasculation is clearly a forte of mine. So to take you back, I met my wife in 2001, and I was completely smitten by her. She is by far the most hilarious woman I know. I had kind of danced around, kind of finding out about her, flirting with her, but not really committing and kind of officially asking her out on a date. And finally, I was like, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna ask her on a date.
So I had heard that there's this show called Stones in His Pockets by Marie Jones, and I heard it was just fantastic. So I was like, this is it. I'm going to take her to a fancy play. I'm going to go out to dinner, and it'll be a great time. So that's what we did. We went to dinner, and we went to the play, and it was just really, really, really nice. We sat back in the nosebleeds, everything. So here's another little fun fact about me. With anxiety, I completely block things out. I was an anxious kid, and I genuinely don't remember, this sounds so dark, but I don't remember sixth grade down. I don't remember teachers, friends, I'm a therapist's dream. I've had so much therapy, but I don't know if I was in a cult. I don't know what happened, but I don't really remember it. So kind of with anxiety, I kind of block stuff out. So my wife and I, we kept dating, and a year and a half later, I was like, I'm going to ask her to marry me. And I had the brilliant idea of centering our engagement around our first date, seeing the play Stones in His Pockets. So I got busy. I remembered the play took place in Ireland, so I surprised her and I flew her to Ireland. The stone in my pocket was the ring. My wife and I were both people of faith, and God was the cornerstone of our relationship. Beautiful. Themes, people, themes, 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 themes. So we had a wonderful time, and then we got married 6 months later. Anyway, that was 2003, and cut to years later, I was shooting Veep in Baltimore, and I saw that Stones in His Pockets was being performed by this local theater group. And I thought, oh my gosh, I haven't seen this play since our first date, so I'm gonna go check it out. I went by myself, and as I was watching, what was unfolding in front of me is a play that was centered around suicide and what happens after that. Beautiful play, but the stones in his pocket is what he used to kill himself. And then it dawned on me. I was so nervous on that first date, and I was so focused on her that I had no room in my brain to pay attention to the play, and I completely disassociated. And I clearly blocked a key plot point out of the play. Of course, then it dawns on me again, I centered my beautiful engagement story around a suicide story, where the stone in my pocket, the ring, was clearly the suicide weapon in the play. So I'm kind of sending a message to my future wife that one day she will bring my demise. Also in that moment, I put it together that I remembered that my wife, she was a makeup artist for SNL for 7 years, and she would always tell me that right after one of her actors did a sketch, she would only be kind, because they were very, very vulnerable. And if they bombed and asked her, how was that? She would always say, it was hilarious. And I realized, that's what she did for me. So I called her from Baltimore and I said, honey, when we went to Ireland for our engagement, did you find it weird that I centered our trip around a story about suicide? And she said, yes. But I didn't want to ruin your buzz. And thankfully, she has stuck around because we've been married for almost 21 years. So, thank you very much.
I was in a bad way when my husband died. After 50 plus years of married life, he was gone. We met in high school when I was 15. I missed my honey. On top of that, there were so many details on me. Phone calls and copies up the wazoo. His birth certificate. I didn't have his birth certificate. I closed out accounts. I opened new ones. I put our house on the market. I ran a tax sale. Your ratty old bras, zip them up in Ziplocs, 4 for $10. People buy anything. I bought a condo. moved in, unpacked, spiffed up the place. Now what? I had friends, I had interests, but without him, life was blah. I didn't know what to do with myself. Then a friend told me about a pageant for older women. Yeah, there is such a thing, every year, to show that we're still with it over 60. I was with it, with my bone-building meds and high blood pressure. But maybe something like that would give me a lift, get me out of my funk. And there I was, 80, and in a pageant. I was a little embarrassed, though, telling folks about it. A pageant? Who does she think she is? But not so embarrassed that I didn't tell everyone I knew, remotely knew, and didn't know from Adam, the cable guy, the checkout girl in Stop and Shop, all about it. Then I thought, would there be a bathing suit event? Good Lord, my thighs. Would I ever? Never. Phew. There was no bathing suit event. This was not a how you look deal, but a who you are kind of thing. They were looking for a can-do attitude. The focus was talent and achievement. I liked that idea. Not only for us seniors, but for all women, especially young girls. What they throw at them every day, all that crap on the internet, lose weight now, buy this makeup, wear these clothes. Poor kids. If I could put myself out there as an older woman who still had plenty of life in her and was living it with all she had, I was all in. And then I was out when I realized I actually had to perform. What could I do? Get up there and sing? Oh, no. Dance? Ay vey. Play an instrument? I'm tone deaf, for heaven's sake. And then it dawned on me. I'm a writer. I could write something. Something interesting and unexpected. Something that would stand out. And it had to be fast. I spent most of the month looking for the gowns and earrings. Oh, right. The pageant's not all about looks. Then why was I trussed up in spandex? My bad. Think. Then it hit me. I'd write about God. As a woman. A she-god instead of a he-god. I mean, really. In our enlightened age, wasn't it about time to switch things up? I gave her some press. I put her on Facebook. She's old, so I thought it fit more than an Instagram account. Know what I mean? I got her on a lineup with Melinda Gates and Madonna on Dancing with the Stars. Don't tell me you wouldn't watch. My girly god texted me. She was so happy she wanted to do lunch. Shows up in a flared skirt and a cinch belt. With her fat ass, the woman does not know how to dress. But don't tell her I said that. I was rocking. I was hot. I couldn't get over myself. It was so good. The judges are gonna love this, I thought. Maybe I'll even win. Miss New York Senior America 2017. I could almost feel the tiara on my head. You get a tiara. Every day, twice a day, I went over my presentation, burning it into my brain. Then in front of the microwave, 5 minutes and 45 seconds to get the timing down pat. I practiced my walk up and down my hallway in high heels yet. I smiled and stopped, half turn, don't be a klutz. And then my big moment, the lights on me. Not a sound from the audience waiting for me to start. Go! The judges didn't love it. They didn't even like it. Maybe the world wasn't ready for my she-god. Or maybe my delivery was off. Or everyone was better than me. Maybe. It could have been anything. So I lost then. At the beginning, that's what I thought, after all that work. But after a while, not so much. I got excited about something when I thought I'd never be excited about anything again. I put my back into it and gave it all I had. Maybe that was the gold I went home with.
By storm with her, all American face and form, and there she is, walking on air she is, fairest of the fair she is, Miss America.
It's Sophia Franklin, and if you don't already know, listen up. My mini-series is live now, each and every Monday, and the only person missing is you. We're dating, we're dumping, we're learning, and we're tapping into all the feels that originally brought us together. Listen and follow Sophia with an F on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Risk. This is Herbie Hancock behind me now, and we just heard the Miss America theme, which followed Rita Plush with her story, Bringing Home the Gold. You can find her at ritaplush.com. Folks, the other day I recorded a conversation I want to share a snippet of with you here, so check this out. Hey folks, you've heard us talking about this spectacular 15th anniversary trip to Portugal that we are inviting all of you on. And we're here, JC Cassis and I are here with Ryan Opaz of Catavino Tours, who has put this trip together for us. Today we thought we would hear a little bit about the food aspect of the trip. Tell us a little bit about what we can expect food-wise, Ryan.
Well, Portugal is known for its food and wine. It is a culture that loves to eat. There is food, and everywhere you turn, you have pastries and desserts and roasted meats and wonderful vegetables, and it's just a culinary wonderland. But the one thing I think is a fun little story about the food here is that food is taxed for the purpose of food as a necessity. It's taxed at a lower tax rate. And so is wine, because wine is a food here. Anything between 9% and 16%, excluding beer and fortified and spirits, is considered food according to Portuguese law, because wow. of the fact that it makes up such a cultural part of their history, and to have a meal without it on the table is something that people wouldn't think of. So I think it's fun to see different perspectives on how people look at the dinner table or the lunchtime table. And we're going to have a couple really fun dinners, including some seafood feasts, and we're going to have some traditional meals around tables with singers. On top of that, we'll get a chance to definitely dive into the pastry culture, because there isn't a cafe in Portugal that doesn't have more than 30 or 40 pastries at any one time ready for you to nibble on.
So, well, it's not going to have that many left when I get there.
And anyone who comes for the 9-day version of the trip will have a personal lunch or dinner with me and JC, small, you know, little, just with a few folks. And we're really looking forward to spending good personal time with everyone on the trip.
Exactly.
I mean, basically every meal I've ever had in Europe has been one of the best meals of my life. So I cannot wait for the food in Portugal. I'm sure it's incredible.
I think we'll have a good time. And the best part of it, which again, the theme of this whole trip is stories. Some of the best stories I have are around the dinner table with friends, new friends and old. And so we're going to have a chance to create our own stories as well. And that's the part that I'm looking forward to the most.
Absolutely. Definitely. I'm sure we'll come away with some stories that will end up on the podcast.
For sure. So if you want to be part of those stories, definitely reach out to us at kevin@risk-show.com or go to risk-show.com/Portugal. And you can sign up for this trip and find lots more information about it. And we cannot wait to see you there.
And that's that. Finally today, folks, we're going to hear a story from Sage, a Risk listener who reached out to us to pitch this next story. So here she is now. This is Sage with a story we call Being Genuine.
Muggy summer night when I was 18, my friend and I were walking down some downtown street in Baltimore looking for trouble. And this man standing outside of a strip club in like this like shiny sharkskin shirt and black slacks and his hair is all slicked back. He called us over and he was like, "Hey, y'all are looking good. You should come and work at the strip club." And I'm a known chatter. So of course I ended up talking to him, partially because I was flattered that he thought that I could work at a strip club and thought that I was attractive enough to do that, but also just because I like to talk. I didn't really think I was going to work there, mostly because I, as an 18-year-old, I had a lot of shame about my body and my sexuality and my attractiveness, so I really didn't see myself working at a strip club. Nonetheless, a couple days later, due to the restless spirit of an 18-year-old, I found myself back at this strip club. And I walked in feeling as tightly strung as a guitar string. I'd bought these giant clomping shoes from Forever 21. And when I got there, they gave me this corset that was like red and black swirls. I brought a giant push-up bra too to wear underneath of it. And I went up into the locker room and got dressed, and I was so nervous and felt like such an imposter being there. I already wasn't super comfortable walking in heels. And as I walked down the steps after changing in the dressing room upstairs, I just remember my knees practically knocking together. They were shaking so hard going down those steps in my new clomping shoes. But nonetheless, I clomped back down the stairs and out onto the floor. It was the beginning of the night, so it was really quiet, but they gave me another cocktail waitress to follow, and I was grilling her with questions, which she very quickly tired of. So she gave me a tray full of Coronas, and she was like, "Just walk them over to those guys over there next to the stage." And I turn with the tray in my hand, and I look to see four men like crouched inches away from this woman who's laying on her back on the stage. And her legs are in the air, and she's shaking her legs back and forth. And it's almost as if she's like wafting her vagina scent into these men's faces. And they have these like glazed looks on their faces, and they're just like staring straight at her pussy, like it's not even attached to a person. And I froze. I didn't even want to walk over there. I didn't want to be involved at all. I was like equal parts horrified and disgusted and confused by the entire situation. So I left the strip club that night and I decided I was never going back. For the few hours that I was there, it felt like my skin was not thick enough to keep all of the disgusting everything in there away from me. Like the eyes and the germs and the grubby floor and the stickiness on the bar. I felt like I could shower under the hottest water. I could get out of the shower and use the scrubbiest loofah I could find, and still I would not be able to scrub off all of the disgusting, shameful things I had seen there. So 10 years later, I'm back in the city that I grew up in. I've been some places, I've done some things, and I've done some growing up. At this point, I'm a preschool teacher. I have the best job I've ever had in my life, enjoyment-wise. I loved being a preschool teacher. I was just tromping around in the woods with little kids. Unfortunately, I was not making enough money, and I was kind of starting to get desperate. So I knew somebody that worked at a strip club, and I asked them about it, and they told me a little bit, and all of a sudden, it didn't seem so bad. Like, maybe it would just be better to be able to pay my bills, and I could maybe do some wafting in order to have some measure of stability in my life. So that weekend, I showed up at the club. As soon as I pulled up, oh, that knot of shame felt like it was, I felt it tighten again as I pulled into the parking lot, because the stucco on the front of the building was crumbling off, and the sign was like this blue, it just looked janky. It was like blinking on and off in the smelly air of this like backwater town. I walk in and there's like music softly pumping out of the speakers, and nobody's on stage yet, and there's this little guy standing behind the bar. And I said, "Hey, I called. I was hoping to see if I could audition." And he just kind of like looks me up and down. He's like, "Yeah, just go change. You're hired. What do you want your name to be?" Off the dome, I came up with Sage. He wrote the name down on the board and sent me off into the back room to change. And I went into the back room and I shoved my feet into these like clear heels that I'd borrowed from someone that were two sizes too small, and tied on an outfit that I'd borrowed from somebody else, and stood looking in this mirror like, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I guess here we are. I went out onto the floor, and before I got on stage, somebody thankfully gave me a shot, and I tossed it back, and I don't really remember the first time I was on stage, because it was borderline mortifying, and I was trying to come up with any move that was not laying on my back, wafting my fumes towards the audience. So, yeah. The first couple weeks of stripping were stressful. I would go into the club every day, and with this, like, fear and dread and that knot of shame tight in my chest and just feeling out of control. So it took a while to warm up. Like, at first, lap dances were pure torture. I felt like I was like hardening my skin so that like none of the disgusting energy emanating from this man I was sitting on would soak into me. Like, even though I was there and I was grateful to be earning money, I felt so much shame about this work that I was doing, and I was like, oh my God, I've become the woman laying on the stage, wafting the fumes. This is terrible. I like didn't really want to tell people, but also I started making more and more money, and gradually I became more and more comfortable. I would find these little moments of like genuinely having fun, or like really connecting with somebody in a lap dance and finding that I'm making this space for them to be authentic. And then within that, I'm able to be a little bit more authentic in this strange, chaotic space than I had anticipated. There were still moments when I was disgusted by customers or even disgusted by myself. But more and more, there were moments of joy or fun or freedom, and that felt good. So one night I walked into the dressing room at work, and my friend flounced over to me and she said, "Do you want to make some money?" She said that she had this private event that she was working, and right away alarm bells went off in my head. Private event sounded menacing. She said she'd done one of these events before. It was for a fraternity and they were super generous and we would make a lot of money. I was pretty iffy about it, and I was like, all right, really, I just need to know one thing. Will there be dick sucking. And she was like, no. It's not that kind of event. So I packed up my trepidations and I decided I was gonna go for it. So I picked up my friend one day and we drove in my little truck smoking joints the whole way there to this like low slung brick building surrounded by a rutted gravel parking lot full of work trucks. The dread that I was feeling about this event doubled in my stomach. Nonetheless, we clamber out of my truck and get our bags and we walk in there. There's a couple other girls waiting for us, along with this guy who's organized all of the dancers. We all stand in this hallway waiting for the woman who's going to lead us in. And there's these like two cane-back chairs that have been used for low-budget weddings and like vestiges of when this place was a fire hall still. Eventually the woman comes out and she's like this like tiny Eastern European woman with enormous fake tits. And she's clearly been in the industry a while. She comes over and she's like, tell me your names. I'll remember all of your names. The girls all do roll call and promptly she forgets all of our names, but tells us to follow her. And she stomps up these little stairs and we all stomp up behind her and she pauses before we go in the door and she goes, don't talk to anyone, don't look at anyone, just follow me. So we push through these doors and enter this loud room full of the smell of meatballs. And I am doing my very best to just look at the ground, but I can't help but just sneak a little peek. And I look up to my right and there's this like enormous buffet table. It looks like it's a mile long. It's got all these big steaming trays, aluminum trays of food over sternos, and the catering people standing behind the table looking exhausted and bored. There's a DJ booth in the corner with a DJ just looking absolutely mystified. And then to my left, there's these big round rented tables scattered between fake Roman columns. And around all of the big round tables are big round men, all wearing hats with their company logos, and they're all laughing and shoveling meatballs into their mouth as this like former radio host stands at the front of the room doing an absolutely horrifying stand-up set. They have this like really bizarre caricature of a man embodying female sexuality when we walk in, but it's like so gross and like off. It was like a dude making fun of drag queens with balloons in his shirt. Yeah. Looking on at the first act, the dread once again doubled in my stomach knowing that we were the second act. So we've got the big guys around the big tables eating big meatballs. We've got the big buffet table and six girls with our backpacks just trying to not look at any of it. The lady leads us into this closet. And I'm saying closet, but I think really what they would want me to call it is a bridal suite. There was like fake ivy on all the walls and this like decrepit velvet throne. The woman puts us in there and she closes the door and she's like, don't move, don't talk, I'll be back. And as soon as she leaves, we're all like, what the fuck is going on? Does anybody, what is this? And somebody's like, all I know is it's a lingerie auction. I don't even know what a lingerie auction is at this point. But the woman comes back and she dumps this grocery bag on the floor and it's full of lingerie, I'm using that term very loosely, that she's bought from the thrift store. And I'm talking like a negligee that maybe someone died in, and like a sports bra that looks like it ran a full marathon, and some overstock panties from Target with the tags still on. The girls and I all reluctantly dig through this pile, trying to parse together an outfit that won't make us look like we've escaped from a burning building. And with no great degree of success, we all find an outfit or two, and we put them on for the lingerie auction. Now, I'll just go ahead and tell you that a lingerie auction, which I was soon going to find out, was an event where you get these lovely women to put on outfits and they parade around the room, and then all the men in attendance can bid on outfits, and whoever bids the highest gets the outfit, but they also get a lap dance. and the outfit gets removed to be handed to them during the lap dance. So we put on our outfits. I actually end up in the sports bra that ran a marathon and the no-show panties. And then I also get this like robe, purple silken robe with a big dark stain on the front. So I once again felt that knot of shame tighten in my chest. These men were gross. This room was gross. I was gross. These other girls were gross. And we were wearing these gross ass outfits from the thrift store. I can't believe I have to go into this room full of Roman columns and fluorescent lighting and tromp around and show myself off to these men. But here I am, and I'm a professional. So I walk back through those little double doors and I head out onto the floor. And at first the men are almost suspicious. They're like, what are you doing here? When we interrupt the meatball shoveling. But as soon as we say lingerie auction, I don't even know that they know what that means, but it brings them relief. Soon enough, we're all talking and laughing and touching arms and wandering around. While I'm wandering around, the oldest man I've ever seen in my life comes roaring over to me in this like enormous electric wheelchair. His two strands of hair, greasy hair, are flowing in the wind behind him. It's almost like his skin is also being sucked back in the wind behind him. He screeches to a halt in front of me with his like handler standing next to him. And he goes, you're my favorite. And I was like, oh, thank you. And he was like, I'm gonna open the bidding at $100. That's all my money. Now, I am not going to be the one to explain how auctions work to this old man. So I hit him with a double thumbs up and I pat him on his shoulder and I say, thank you so much. And I head back into the crowd. And true to his word, bidding starts. I'm on the auction block, posing, showing off my good side. And the old man opens the bidding with $100. To my surprise and delight, he is immediately outbid. And to my ultimate surprise, soon there's a bidding war over my marathon sports bra and my oversized panties. But, you know, I'm not going to say no. So when the bidding comes to a close and these men have paid $400 for this outfit, I'm flabbergasted and delighted. And even a little gassed up despite the lighting and the outfit. So this plumber who I'd been talking to earlier waddles out to the middle of the room to the folding chair waiting for him. And he lowers himself into it with a grunt. And the music kicks on. And I start shimmying and shaking around him and peeling clothes off. And honestly, at this point, I'm kind of relieved to take off the clothes, which is counterintuitive, but the sports bra and the oversized panties are not adding to my vibe right now. So peel those puppies off, start doing my thing, rubbing my butt all over this man. I'm trying to be vigorous, but not too vigorous, so the folding chair doesn't go scooting across the room. And he's delighted, the crowd is delighted, they're cheering. I'm pleasantly surprised by the whole thing, as I have been by stripping in general, but this event is a whole new ball of wax, and I'm delighted that it's turning out as well as it is. So that dance comes to a close, and I go back into the closet, and with renewed delight and excitement, I put on the oversized nightgown, the rayon nightgown with the lace trim to my neck, and tromp back out into the crowd with my robe flowing off my shoulders, big dark stain behind me. I'm back out. So second round of bidding starts, and the old man opens the bidding once again with $100. And immediately he's outbid. But in this moment, the true fellowship and fun and generosity of this fraternity starts shining through, because they're all quietly chipping into this old man's fund. And he's confused by the whole thing. But the bidding comes to a close and he goes, who won? And they said, you did. He's confused, but he's not gonna ask too many questions. So he throws his wheelchair into gear and he zooms off to the middle of the room. And he gets there and the music kicks on. And I start shimmying and shaking. But the old man starts cranking his chair back. And I think he's just getting comfortable. So I'm dancing around him. But he just keeps going. And it feels like it's like a full minute later. The old man is laying fully horizontal in his giant electric wheelchair, staring up at the drop ceiling and the fluorescent lights. And I'm not exactly sure what to do next. So I tromp over to close to his head and I say, can you see me? And he says, no. And I say, turn your head. And so just as slowly as he cranked his chair back, he cranks his neck 1 inch to the left, still staring at the ceiling. I'm like, can you see me? He's like, no. So I'm like, okay, I guess we're gonna change tactics here. And I start to clamber up the mountain of this wheelchair. And he's like, easy on the chair. And I'm like, okay. So even more slowly and delicately, I'm climbing up. And at this point, I'm fully naked, wearing like 8-inch heels. So this feels like an operation. And eventually I get up there and I start to try and get myself onto his lap. But as I'm settling myself on there, I feel taped to his thigh the tube of a catheter. And like immediately my stomach clenches, but it's not the knot of shame. It's like that feeling you get when you watch somebody get hurt really bad and your stomach tightens up and you get all hot almost. Because all I can think about is like, what if I was dancing on this man's lap and I just like ripped the catheter out and I just can't even stomach that thought. So at this point I decide I'll pivot, literally pivot. I start reconfiguring myself so my knees are on either side of his head and these sharp shoes are clear of his like fragile little old man's skull and won't get tangled in his two hairs and rip him out because it's all he's got left. So very carefully, I situate myself in this like suspended 69 position over this old man. And at this point, the room is silent. Like, I'm not getting a lot of feedback. I don't know how things are going, but I'm also in pretty deep. So I just start shaking it. Like, there's really no other option. I start shaking my ass over this old man's face. And like, I feel real tight in this moment. Like, this is really not far at all from the woman laying on the ground, wafting the vagina fumes at the men. And I don't feel great about this, but it's also what's happening. So I keep shaking. And from this crowd that's so silent, you could hear a pube drop. A man shouts from the crowd. He goes, "You're a good woman." I look back and the old man is like smiling with like the joy of a 4-year-old opening the Christmas present that he's wanted all year up at my asshole. And I look around the crowd and they're all looking on with this like quiet reverence. And I can't help but smile because like, really, they're probably saying I'm a good woman because this is the last pussy that this old man is ever going to see in his life. And I'm really giving it my all up there. So at the end of the dance, I clamber down from the chair and the old man seems truly, genuinely grateful for the dance. And I leave with the most money in my pocket that I'd ever left work with. And I'm delighted and I'm surprised and I feel beautiful. Thinking back to that woman that I saw lying on the stage, shaking her legs back and forth and wafting herself towards those men, my understanding of that moment has changed so much. It makes sense that as a naive 18-year-old, I would have been shocked or horrified by what I saw. But what I couldn't see in that moment is that I had been so twisted by our fucked up culture around sexuality. Women are so often both encouraged to be sexual, but also really shamed for engaging with their sexuality in any way or being empowered by their sexuality. I'm really grateful for stripping in so many ways. I'm grateful for the financial stability it's brought into my life. I'm grateful for the confidence it's given me. And there's so many ways that I've grown, but I think most importantly, it's allowed me this new lens to look at my own sexuality and expand the view beyond this lens of shame that our culture gives us. There are still nights when I'm getting ready for work and I just really don't want to go in. I feel some level of disgust, but more often than that, I've found that stripping has so much to do with connection and being genuine and creating a space for others to feel comfortable in their sexuality. There's so many moments of joy and connection and opportunities to cultivate this space of freedom and inhibition for myself and for customers. I became a stripper for the money, but I've been astonished by all of the other beautiful things that it's brought into my life.
Risk. This is David Rose with The Stripper behind me now. And we just heard from Sage about the ups and downs and ins and outs of that fascinating profession. Folks, the next Risk live show is in LA on June 18th at the Lyric Hyperion. You can always find out when Risk shows or our What's Your Story events are happening when you go to risk-show.com/live.
We'll be right back. We're back.
Folks, on Thursday, we have the Best of Sex Stories number 3. And what's better than sex? But that's Thursday. And folks, today's the day. Take a risk.